Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 13, lucky 13, of Bear Belief. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Gabriel.
Hello. Well, here we are again, once more.
One more time.
Oh, my God. Luckily, though, it was such a bad rendition. I don't think the algorithm is going to pick up and demonetize us. Not that we're monetized, but no. If we were.
Copyright infringement. Cancel. That's a different
LMFAO. That was, I can't remember.
No. It was around the same time, but I don't.
It was, yeah, the same kind of era. And we are happy that you're all back listening to us one more time. That's going to be the theme today. And today we are going to kind of explore a phenomenon that has been weird, that I would say frustrating over the past few years, especially, is all of this anti-wokeism stuff that's in the ethos right now that I find very, very frustrating. I'm old enough, I don't know if you remember this, but I feel like there was a point in time, in especially in the 90s and early aughts, where it felt like there was a lot of progress being made. Like there was a lot of talk about, you know, equal rights and civil rights and a lot of things seemed like they were moving forward. At least that's what it felt like for me. And there's a lot I was involved in, you know, we all did some marches and some protests and stuff. And it felt good because things were changing, things were progressing. And it was generally seen, diversity was seen as like a good thing. And then something happened. And now it feels like the pendulum has swung so hard towards the other direction, where now it's like, I feel like being nice or being considerate of other people's civil rights is now like a bad thing. There is a inherently pretty big machine, especially in the US. We feel it in Canada as well. But that pushing all of this anti-woke stuff, and it's, to me, it's scary. A lot of it is being driven by religious right in the US. A lot of it is driven by evangelicals, which happen to be the same people who are driving the Republicans and the extreme conservatives. It's the same gang, which I don't know if, you know, how much of that is a coincidence, but it is kind of interesting that this anti-woke stuff has a spiritual element to it, or at least a religious element to it. So I don't know if this is something that you've observed in your life, or if there's something that you can relate to in a certain way. Like, do you see wokeism or anti-wokeism in your world?
Which is kind of funny, because in my world, I think the churches in Montreal are kind of starting to wake up. Right. Yeah. Which so when you were proposing this and we were trying to figure out what angles to take on this subject matter is no. I remember when Orange Shirt Day first came out. So the recognition of residential schools and honoring those who were lost and whatnot.
The missing and murdered women and Native women.
And all of that. Yeah. And we did, I organized a blanket exercise, and Orange Shirt Days weren't really a thing at that point. Mm. And our church was really proud after the fact, because they started seeing these things on the news. Like, oh, Jess, hey, look, we did that. And hey, look. But this wasn't new in other circles, right? Yeah. This information was not new, definitely within the Indigenous community. And so I kind of feel that, within this context, we are becoming aware of marginalized realities, if that makes sense. You know, like, we're so used to being like, okay, we're doing the good church thing and we have all our missions, like we're gathering clothes for the poor, we're, you know, making meals for the homeless, we're whatever sort of mission trend is on, we all sort of, you know, raise money for or whatnot. And as we've gotten older, the congregations have gotten older, like energy and ability has decreased. So, it, you know, and how people have navigated to kind of fulfill that mission obligation has happened. But I think definitely the millennium have required all groups, all peoples to be aware of other people's realities, you know, and I think we're finding a language of how to share that and how to hear that, you know? And I think there's been a lot of movements in that. So no, I can't really say anti-wokeness, mm-hmm. because again, the original terminology in wokeness is about social justice. And that's one of sort of the main pillars of Christianity is for equity and fairness to all and making sure everybody has what they need and that. So, but anti-wokeness, not so much.
And I think that's kind of like the irony of the whole thing for me, because the message of Jesus mm-hmm. was in, if you want to bring it down in comparative terms, Jesus would have been considered woke, like by all measures. Like if, and yeah. this is where like wokeism, in case you don't know, wokeism is basically just kind of awakening to systemic injustice. So like needing to, or emphasize to actively dismantle institutional barriers mm-hmm. when it comes to racism, gender, sexuality, class, all of these inequalities that exist in the world. And by my reading of the Bible, that's what the message was. Like if you boil down the message and the message of, especially the in the gospel, to me, that's what it's like. It's like, be nice to people, treat people well, and like go and help people when you can. And that's where I don't understand how there's a big religious backlash, especially with the extreme, I don't know what to call them, like the evangelicals. I always come back to the evangelicals because they're the ones that are most prominent in North American society with these viewpoints. To a certain degree, Catholics also. I've heard from many Catholics the same kind of rhetoric, because Catholic Catholicism still remains a very conservative. Mm. Thankfully, the new Pope he's been impressing me more than the last few ones. So he seems to have a more of a message of tolerance, which I think in the end is what pisses people off. Like, if I can use that expression. I think when we, back in the 90s and the early aughts, we were talking mostly about tolerance and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And now wokeism, I think, takes it a bit further, where mm-hmm. we're looking at actual equality and actual, maybe even equity in regards to all these different people in around them. And I think that's what bothers these people.
Well, I think now what's happening is we're actually challenging power structures.
Yes.
Right? It's not just kumbaya, yes. what can we do to help everyone? Criticism.
And let's not forget who is at the head of this anti-wokeism movement. They are white men, for the most part. Rich, old white men, when we have them everywhere. For example, like in Quebec, the Bloc Québécois leader, Yves-François Blanchet, and the Parti Québécois leader, Paul Saint-Pierre Plamondon, have frequently denounced wokeism, which is hilarious. Like, the Bloc Québécois used to be so far on the left, they used to, like, big proponents of LGBTQ rights and women's rights and all these things. And all of a sudden, there's this switch more towards the right. And they've both publicly criticized the Canadians, the Montreal Canadians, for doing land acknowledgments referring to wokeism. So if you're not from Canada, this is something that we do quite frequently at events, cultural events. I hear it at theater shows and sometimes.
It was part of the reconciliation items. Yeah.
Where in Canada, there's been a lot of efforts for reconciliation and recognition with the things that have happened to Aboriginal people in Canada. And so oftentimes there will be a land acknowledgement saying that, like, where these events are happening on stolen land. And albeit it's true, I do kind of find it interesting that we do these things. Because, like, so for example, like at La Place des Arts, where we go see these, like, you go see the symphony, the opera, you go see these, like, really hoity-toity events, because it's just, I mean, let's call it, like, who goes to the opera, really? Like, it's, mm-hmm. like, it's, it, that's what, the events to me, they feel hoity-toity when I go. And they do this land acknowledgement that I think is hypocritical. I don't really see what the point of it is. It doesn't really accomplish anything. And so they take a moment to acknowledge that we're on stolen land. I'm like, okay, so we're acknowledged that we're on stolen land. To me, that's the equivalent of, like, I don't know, like the British standing in the British Museum in front of, like, all of their stolen artifacts from Egypt going, oh, yes, we did steal this from Egypt, but it's okay because we're admitting to it. Like,
yeah.
And that's where the criticism come from. And I think that criticism is legitimate. Like, okay, fine, we're acknowledging it, but, like, then what? Like, that's not enough. Like,
I think it goes deeper than that. So I did a workshop around on this subject, and the land acknowledgement, it just isn't a recognition of hurts of the past. It's actually a greeting. So how we're like, hi, I'm Jess, I'm from Calgary, Alberta, and I by way of here and this and that, it is a cultural recognition of, hey, hi, I'm from here and you're from there. There is that component to it as well, that we white, yeah, outside the community haven't always gotten that message. Again, we were being told, well, no, it's because it's for reparations, it's for this.
Yeah.
No, it's acknowledging where we are. So I think that's what happens, and that's where we're sort of coming into that gray zone of, yeah, the wokeness, is that as it's being taught, right? Like, I think it started off in a very, here's my experience, you know, and how do we support and how do we be allies for those who aren't in those communities, and how do we not speak for those communities, but yet help make space for people to represent themselves and share what they need versus us telling people what they need, to then this, oh, well, now we just have to be nice to everybody. And, oh, you know, we teach our children at such a young age to share. But why can we not share as adults? Or why can we just not give space? You know, from a female perspective, like, I'm still telling men, don't speak for me. Mm. Oh, so you're saying this. Oh, Jessica said this. No, Jessica did not say that. Jessica is very clear in what she said. And if you want to hear me that way, that I can't control your ears. But this is what I'm saying. It's funny. I'm fine. I'm coaching an all girls football team, and all the other coaches are male, right? Sort of a young woman who's learning, yeah, and I'm navigating to sort of translate for these young girls on how to speak to men, but still be strong women, you know, and they want to be emotional and they want to be this, but then the guys don't get it. And then they're like, why is everybody crying? And I'm like, because girls can do that.
But I think part of that problem is that we've demonized those emotions. I think because, I mean, okay, so you might want to call me woke for this, but here I go. I think female emotions and female perspectives have been demonized for most of humanity, at least in our culture. There are, okay, and this is where it gets interesting. Like,
how about within North American, the global,
yeah,
North?
Yeah, and
right?
like global North or like Western culture.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting that in the majority of human history, and from what historians can find, this has always been the case, with the exceptions of a few matriarchal tribes where women were perceived as the leaders. This has been the case, like, forever and in over and over again. So I think this, when you stand up and acknowledge that these female reactions or women's reactions to things are okay, and that it's okay to accept them and it's okay to have them. That's where that woke stuff comes in. And I think it becomes a defense mechanism. Like, you get called woke, like, it's hurled at you as an insult. And that's where it baffles me. Like, you call me woke, like, it's a bad thing. Like, you mean it's a bad thing
that I know.
That I acknowledge that these women or these gay people or these trans people or these Native Americans or these immigrants or these refugees are having a bad time and I want to make their lives better? Like, that makes me woke? Well, good. Like, fine. If that makes me woke, I'm woke. Like, and I have no problems with that. What annoys me is the people who are hurling this as an insult can't think for two seconds like that what they're saying is like inherently anti-human. It's just and we've had many examples of this over the past few episodes where it's hard for me to reconcile the religious aspect of these people. Like in my experience, like at least with from the evangelicals, they perpetrate this. Mm-hmm. And it's just I don't understand, like how do these people get there? It boggles my brain.
Well, I think it goes back into this whole idea of, you know, your sort of Christian measuring stick, and like, what is a Christian? What is a person of faith? You know, is it sticks to the rules of what other people who have thought before? Is it developing a relationship with a divine other and taking my journey with that? Is it social justice? It comes down to that scripture of, you know, love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, love your neighbor as yourself. This is what Jesus said all the laws in the Old Testament were all about.
Yeah.
You know? And so it gets really easy to say, no, it's just this, no, it's just that, no, it's this. Like I had a leadership say, you know, well, hey, churches, you gotta find purpose, but it can't just be social justice. We're not social workers. There's more to a church than just serving individual needs. And I'm like, okay, I hear that. What is the purpose of a spiritual community? And I think that's where people are getting in the us versus thems, right? Like, so this is working for us. There's money here. We're doing this. We have power in this. So we're going to stay in this niche, whichever one it is.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is. I think what you were referring to is John 13:34, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. Could be. But they all
kind of paraphrase each other. It keeps coming back to it. But again, like Jesus's whole 3 years was challenging power structures, right? So he wasn't just challenging the Romans. He was challenging the Jewish authorities as well, who had kind of bought in with the Roman structures to keep their leverage, right? And he was never about that. That's what got him into trouble at the end, right? And so this is what the narrative is. It's like, well, hey, Jesus died on the cross for our sins. Again, the moral reason, right? No, Jesus pushed so hard on this so that everybody could have that equity of need, that equity of access, that equity of love, which does reconcile us to God because it's about love. God is that source of love. So now the narrative is, okay, we're bad people all the time and we need to earn that. No, grace is like you have it, but guess what? There's all this happening and this person gave us this example of fighting for social justice, fighting for love, fighting for, in some would say this, utopiatic, that's not the right word, yeah. Utopia society.
Utopic.
Thank you. No. Society. Why should, if we're a part of this group, then we should have as much passion as that,
Yeah. You
know, and that's that drive, you know, you can't just be like, hey, I'm loving God, but then I'm being miserable to everybody around me. You know, it's not just about, you know, I gave this huge donation. So, okay, great. So you gave $1 million or whatnot. Like we have a hockey player here that just finished giving a $10 million donation to the Children's Hospital. Brilliant. Is that for show or is there a relationship?
Or is it just a tax break?
Is it a tax break? And I'm not questioning this hockey. Like celebrity does this, right?
It does. But at the same time, like it's better than the celebrity who doesn't do anything. Like, I don't know if you remember. There was a time where we had a hockey player here. His name was PK Subban. He's one of the few that I actually know who it names because between you, me and everybody listening, I really don't care about hockey. I could not care. I felt I could wipe hockey off the face of the earth with by snapping my fingers, kind of a la what was that that guy in the Marvel comic or the I don't know.
Oh, Thanos with his glove.
Yeah, I'm gonna snap my fingers and make hockey disappear. I totally would, and I don't care who hates me for it. There you go. That's my hot take.
Right.
But I remember PK Subban because he was one of those hockey players that was heavily involved in he would volunteer at the children's hospital. Mm-hmm. He donated all these money, and he was all, and there was always like a trail of media following mm-hmm. him when he was doing it. And I know that he was well liked. He was a very personable, likable guy, and I get it. And he brought all this attention to the hospital, and they probably got donations because of it. Mm-hmm. And the kids were so happy to mm-hmm. see him, and he was bringing joy to those children. But then it's like, it's not up to me to judge the validity mm-hmm. of his actions, but the consequences were there. And I think the consequences of your actions sometimes maybe matter more than in certain aspects mm-hmm. of your intentions. That's why I'm frustrated by these anti-woke people, because there are consequences to what they do. People mm-hmm. are dying because of some of these anti-woke policies that are happening. It's not right. And that's why I have a hard time reconciling both those ideologies. How can you on one side follow these what's set out for you in the New Testament, and on the other hand completely act in the opposite way? Matthew 25 is an interesting one. It is linked. It's the parable of the sheep and the goats. And in that parable, Jesus lists five actionable ways to express his love: feeding the hungry, giving drink to the thirsty, welcoming the strangers, clothing the naked, caring for the sick, and visiting the imprisoned. Most of those things today will get you called woke by the religious right. There is an extreme, there is a big push all over the world right now against immigration, against helping people who are poor, against social programs, which is, to me, social programs is a collective modern way of clothing the naked, caring for the sick, that's universal health care, visiting the imprisoned. We're doing the opposite. We're like rounding up more and more people for like the dumbest reasons mm-hmm. and shoving them in prisons and then forgetting about them, putting mm-hmm. them in terrible conditions. I don't know if you're aware, people are now comparing modern prisons to what slavery was like back in the day, mm-hmm. because there are prisons where people are made to work mm-hmm. And they're not paid because they're prisoners, or they're paid like pennies an hour kind of thing. They can't really do much with the money that they get because there's so little of it. And there's profit that's attached to it. Some of them, like, there are call centers now that are manned by prisoners, where when you call, the people answering the phone are prisoners. Mm-hmm. This doesn't make any sense to me. Like, how are we sweat farming these anyway? And again, these people, it's the same people. It's these billionaires, it's these big multinationals. These private prisons in the US are all aligned with the right. They're all corporate. It's bonkers. We are
right, but as at least we're in a society where we have some of these systems, but the systems are broken.
So much,
you know, broken. Like, if I think the kids yeah. like that are in foster system right now, like are they properly cared for? We hear more horror stories than hey, this was a good experience yeah. or whatnot, like that.
I think we hear the horror stories because the positive stories don't get out. I think
there's a little bit of that, yeah. but I also working with this demographic.
I have quite a few friends who come from parents who fostered them, then adopted, and they're all had great experiences. I don't know if they were lucky, or if it's just because we hear so much of the ones, and plus you work in an area
right.
where you're gonna attract that kind of
exactly, but at the same, like, you're hearing there's not enough spaces, we yeah. need more foster families, we need more this, need more that yeah. and then I think again, like, where's the limit, right? Like, I like helping people, but yes, I get a validation from it, right? Yeah. and my husband would affectionately call those I was helping like stray cats, you know.
Well, in a way,
like, how many stray cats are you gonna help? But then a cat can bite you,
of course,
or scratch you yeah. and or take advantage, right? And all of a sudden you're like, hey, wait a minute. So again, where's the healthy boundaries in supporting?
That's a very good question.
You know, supporting and helping. But what I've also learned, I'm not I'm not a superhero. Well, I'm not there to rescue people. I'm there to help. Like, here's a direction you can go.
I don't have the tools to help these people. That's why I really think these social programs are important. I think as a society, as a collective, we have more power than Jessica and Gabriel by themselves trying to save people on the side of the street. You can do that to a certain extent. But like, and this is a conversation, not a conversation, but a thought I have a lot. Twice a week, I go downtown to meet with my personal trainer. And on the way, there are two places. There are two stoplights where in both these stoplights, I get asked for money by people who are on the corner. They go car by car when the light is red and they like stick their hand out and blah, blah, blah. And I always smile and I say, no, sorry. And I legitimately don't have money. Like, who has paper money with them anymore? But then I think I can't help but like feel a little bit of guilt, even though, because it's the same people now. I've been doing this
routine?
This commute. I've been doing this commute now for over 18 months. So I've been seeing like the same group of people. It's weird. We kind of recognize each other now. Like, it's clear. Like, we, you know, you smile, you wave, and we all go our merry way. But it's still like, you know, that consciousness it still weighs a little bit on me. So that tiny interaction with these few people weighs on me, which is why I don't understand how these anti-woke people.
Right. But then they're playing on the other end, because there are people that abuse the systems as well. Right. Yeah. Like, when my mom was the secretary for a church downtown, they used to have like food baskets. They used to have like sort of money vouchers, all these things. And then they switched to just sort of gift certificates. And then some of the guys wouldn't want that, because you're not allowed to buy alcohol or cigarettes with the store vouchers or whatnot. But you knew the ones who were playing the system versus the ones that generally needed help, right? But
I think playing the system when it's all you have, like, that doesn't bother me. Like, what bothers me is people like Donald Trump, who just got himself a $1.2 million slush fund where they're going to reward a bunch of people.
Exactly. Like, that gets back to the politics of saying, like, hey, let's set things up properly. Yeah. Like, we just keep building these high skyscraper condo things, right? Well, there's bylaws of how many are supposed to be lower income housing. Well, all the developers still get around that.
Yeah,
so it's not just in the city. Like, really, it's happening like right here. It's like, really, why are these people not being fined the way that they're supposed to be? Because then we can then take that money and create, lower income housing.
There's so many problems. Like, and it's that's one of the legitimate things that does kind of tick me off.
But I think that's where the anti-woke is sort of seeing, well, you know what, your wokeness isn't good because look at all the abuse that's happened. So it's really not working anyways, right? Like, I agree. Why are they trying to negate it? Because it's about redeeming own power and own influence and,
But that's the point. Like, the system is rigged. And I think that's also part of it, is that some of these anti-woke people are definitely just there to keep the system going.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So are you woke? Are you anti-woke? Let us know at Bear Belief. You can find us on YouTube at Bear Belief and on our website at bearbelief.ca. And of course, you can write us at our email, bearbeliefpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find the podcast at Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We are everywhere. So thank you so much for listening. See you next time. And thanks, Jessica.
Thank you, Gabriel.